So an informal presentation to be followed by a working session. So I'm not going to go through big introductions or anything. I think most of you probably know everybody up here, but Mamie Jennings Mabry is a CDC employee. John Lipsky is a Northrop Grumman contractor, and Ricky Merrick is a contractor for APHL, and I'm a Oregon State Health employee. So there, that's the disclosure part there. So Mamie is going to give us a sort of an overview, and then we'll just briefly go through the different communities involved in the lab messaging community, and then we'll discuss.
Thank you so much, J.A. So many of you know that this is a community that was launched at last year's FIN conference for the first time. And it was, it had a number of names at the beginning. Before the FIN conference, we knew we needed a community of practice in the laboratory area, but there were a number of existing groups already in place. And so we kicked this thing off initially as the laboratory community of practice. And we got some pushback from that, some forming and storming there, folks saying, well, you know, this is not public health laboratory work. This is laboratory messaging work. And so we decided, well, we'll kick this off as the electronic laboratory reporting community of practice, and then we'll open it up to other groups as appropriate. So that's what we did. That you can read here what was on the FIN conference program in 2008. The ELR-COP brings together FIN stakeholders who are interested in ELR, but additional areas to be considered are et cetera, et cetera. Well, how many of you guys were in those sessions, those community meetings? Okay, we got three, four, five, just about everybody, great. So you guys know that there was a lot of storming going on in those meetings as people were saying, no, there's already an ELR community of practice going on. You know, we don't need another community of practice around ELR. And so the group kind of continued to have those conversations in those community meetings. And it wasn't until after that meeting, actually in the ELR meeting that night that I attended and a number of other people attended, where we started talking about the other groups other than ELR that were already in existence, the FLIP group, work with APHL. And what was decided, or what was kind of put forward that night, was that what was needed was a kind of an overarching or an umbrella community that would establish communication and collaboration across these already existing groups, that the groups were somewhat in silos, that they didn't have a lot of communication, that the FLIP group didn't really know always what the ELR group was doing, so they wanted some sort of mechanism for communication and collaborating. So that kicked off in the fall, that group. And what this group is looking to do is having consistency in laboratory messaging, trying to identify standards in the domain area that are needed, and try to encourage best practices in this area. And so when we were getting ready for this talk, the four of us were on a conference call, and we realized that this has been a very active community with these three groups, but we want to open it up to other individuals, other practitioners in laboratory messaging areas. So if there are other efforts that are going on, this community is open to you as well. So here are the three working groups. ELR, the Public Health Laboratory Interoperability Project, and Laboratory Information Management Systems Integration. Just a show of hands in the room, if you're involved in one of those three projects, raise your hand. Okay, so we have a few folks that are not. Thanks, John. A few folks that are not involved in those projects, but again, you are certainly welcome to be here. And in a community, everyone's voice is valuable and is heard. So please feel free, after you hear from each one of these working groups and we start having discussions, please feel free to speak up and tell us what you think about this community. So I'm going to turn it over now to J.A. Magnuson.
Okay. Thank you, Mamie. So I was just going to give you a little brief overview of the ELR community. I thought I had to start this off with a definition of ELR, and this is what I always say. It's electronic, requiring secure electronic transmission and of data. And no, I would not say that sending a disk through the mail would qualify, because I've been asked that question, and I said no. But laboratory, the data source would be various laboratories and reporting to public health, legally mandated. If you look at the sort of the big picture, what does ELR do? Well, you have different laboratories, including the public health, the state public health labs, sending mandated reporting data to the state. The state then, and this can vary a little bit because states have different setups, but generally the state distributes the data to the state program areas and to the local health departments. In Oregon, where I'm from, the local health departments have the burden of case investigation. So it's very important that these data transfers be pretty much simultaneous. The ELR National Work Group was established in 2001. Some of the things we do, we conduct an annual snapshot survey of ELR progress in the U.S. And the work group includes all states, two territories, five metro areas, as well as representatives from some of the national organizations and large national labs. I don't want to leave that out, of course. The meetings and communications, we have monthly conference calls, which are sponsored by CSTE, and those are open to all members, as well as people who are just interested. We have the annual in-person meeting at the Finn Conference, which is today at 4 to 5 in the Fairley Room. So if you didn't know about that, that's where that is. We have a website. We can go for more information. And I thought I'd include a little information on the national survey, because I think that's really extremely interesting. This just is a quick show of participation in the survey over the years. We started the survey in 2004, and you can see we've had like excellent participation, basically 100% for 2005, 6, and 7. 2008, we slipped a little bit, and that's my fault because I had an accident and didn't, you know, harass people in the way I usually do. So we didn't reach 100%, but we're going to go back up for 2009, I'm sure. Here's a look at the historic progression of ELR with our survey. And you can see through the years that, well, the first thing we have is people who are saying no or not interested, not too many. You can see the testing coming up, the planning stages, and the operational stages. So I think that this does nicely illustrate that ELR is definitely improving. We're certainly going up in operational jurisdictions, and we're going down in testing and planning, which is as it should be. Another question that we asked, this is from the 2008 survey, we asked this last year too, which is, what are the barriers to ELR in your jurisdiction? Another really interesting question. And so we asked people to rank these 1 to 3. So 1 would be the biggest barrier, the most important one, and 3 would be, well, still important, but not quite. So these are the number 3 ranks here. And you can see, there's several that are quite similar. But when we add the number 2 ranks, you can see that staff shortage is starting to pull ahead in an exciting way. And then when you add the number 1 ranked barrier, you can see that staff shortage is clearly the biggest barrier. Funding shortage, obviously, that's going to be a big one, and message variation. So those are really, as I look at that, those are what I see as the top three national barriers. So to look at staffing just a little bit, since that was identified as such a problem, you can see that if you look at the ELR staffing, so first we have full-time employees, then part-time employees, then full-time IT employees, and part-time IT employees. And you can see that there aren't that many full-time employees working on ELR, which is really very, very disheartening. You can see in 2009, the ELR group proposed a CSTE position paper, which was, you know, voted on and approved. And it had two main tenets. One was recommending that CDC fund a minimum of two full-time positions in each ELR jurisdiction. And the other was to convene a national ELR task force, which, to, you know, basically offer guidance for national ELR initiatives. And this was an attempt to get, obviously get increased funding so we can have more staff in ELR, because ELR being, in a lot of ways, the foundation of so much of the communicable disease surveillance is a very critical piece of public health that is not really ever received the importance that I think it should. So whether that will do anything or not, I don't know, but it's nice that we got it approved. So that's the ELR. Does anybody have any quick questions on ELR? Yes.
Let me go back
and find it.
Thank you.
Back through all the exciting things. Okay, yes. So not interested would be mainly...
I see stages.
Okay. Yeah. Not interested is mainly... Most of the people who answered not interested were metropolitan areas or something that really... or some of the territories that we surveyed that either just don't... I haven't even really got a grasp on this yet, or maybe it's not really appropriate for their situation. Maybe they are getting reporting from their state. So it doesn't necessarily mean a really bad thing.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
Is this just representing the State Department of Health?
No.
There's no laboratory. I mean, does this graph show labs that are not interested
in health? No. But we do have a lot of lab data in the survey. And again, I just apologize. I was late with getting the survey out this year. It has gone out to all the people who participated in the survey. So if you were a participant or you were on the editorial board, you've received your copy. If you weren't, then you haven't seen this and you're thinking, why didn't I see it? Well, I'm going to post it. You saw the website there a minute ago. Where was my website thing? There it is. So there's the website, and I'm going to post that once I get back from Atlanta. So, you know, probably wait till Monday and look for it there. I'm going to go ahead and post all of the 2004 up, which we didn't have on the website before, but I was thinking, why aren't they there? So, because I didn't put them there, but I'm going to. So go ahead and check that like Monday. Any other quick questions? No? Okay. Go through all my exciting animations. I guess I could go to the slide, couldn't I? But on the other hand, it's fun to see them again. So. There.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the LIMS integration, or the LIMS-I project. So LIMS integration in a nutshell. LIMS integration is targeted at the laboratories that are part of the Laboratory Response Network, the LRN. And I'm a picture guy, and I have to say thanks to Jason Scott, my BA back there, for putting together all these slides for me. He did a great job. The primary method today for the LRN laboratories to get data to the CDC about the testing that they've done is through data entry into the LRN Results Messenger. Application developed by CDC, really developed by the guys in the last two rows back there. It provides standardized, secure data transmission to the CDC. The problem, or the challenge really is that, as you can see from the picture, a lot of laboratories have invested heavily in a LIMS. And so the use of the results messenger means double data entry and maintenance of another system, although it's not extreme maintenance. So LIMS-I, in a nutshell, really is about how do we let the LRN laboratories utilize the infrastructure to get the data to the CDC without that double data entry, and really then let that person in the public health lab do public health work. Rather than worrying about entering data, they can go back to doing what they need to do. And that yellow line, there's a lot of magic that happens there, but that's really all about standardized data exchange. It's about HL7. It's about standardized vocabulary like Link and SNOMED and those kinds of things. So our scope, currently we're working in various phases with 36 laboratories, which represents 33 states. We're also working directly with several of the major vendors, LabWare being one of them, ChemWare, which is another one, and then finally StarLIMS. And a couple points on this, just you can see how there are several vendors that if we can get them kind of nailed, we cover quite a few of the LRN laboratories. And I'll just take a moment to talk a little bit about the work we're doing with StarLIMS. We're working with them in Indiana to develop a pilot module for the bioterrorism, whereby they will have all of the LRN bioterrorism agents and assays configured, pre-configured in their LIMS, and the also the standard vocabulary associated with that, and also have the ability to generate the HL7 message. So the idea being that we do it right one time with StarLIMS in Indiana, that can then be reused over and over again in all the other StarLIMS states. Now, one caveat, and how many StarLIMS states, how many StarLIMS users are in here? Only one, okay. But the caveat is that's for version 9, or version 10 of StarLIMS. It doesn't apply to version 9. And the future goals are really all of the LRN laboratories, which includes all the state public health labs, as well as some major local and international laboratories. So we'll talk a little bit about some lessons learned. One of the first ones, as far as a lesson learned, is keep it simple, which is a challenge. It's a complex world when you start to deal with laboratory, microbiology, and then you throw on top of that HL7. And my head's still spinning from Austin's presentation earlier today on HL7, and you throw on standardized vocabulary. It gets to be very complex, and one of the challenges is to really drive it to keep it simple. No such thing as one size fits all. I think early on in the process of looking at standardized messaging and LIMS, there was maybe a hope that there was a single solution that would take care of everything, and that's just not true. There's a lot of ways to really slice this pie, and so there is truly no one size fits all. And I don't know if you guys can see that picture too well, but you know, another lesson for me especially, this really resonates, is collaboration with a purpose. I really like this picture because it shows people that are collaborating and working together, but for a very concrete goal. And so to me, the communities of practice are all about that. They're all about collaboration with a defined goal with concrete results. Not just, you know, we get together and talk, but we really do have a goal in mind of what we want to accomplish. Keep your eyes on the prize. I guess this is good if you're the cat. But, you know, the idea behind this is it takes a while to really to get there. There's a lot of work involved with developing any kind of standardized messaging. And you really do need to keep your eyes on the prize, that it will pay off when you get it in place. But there's a lot of work to get there. And then the longest journey starts just with the first step, right? So I'm not going to go too much in depth here, but talk a little bit about some of the work products that the LIMSI team has produced to try to provide guidance to laboratories to implement the message. We have documents that help with setting up your LIMS, a business rules document, as well as very specific instructions on how to configure tests. This slide actually speaks to that one size fits all. Some states use a message broker like a Rhapsody or BizTalk, some don't. But in general, some functionality has to happen whereby the data from the LIMS is turned into an HL7 message. And so we have documentation that supports that. And then finally, how do you get the data transmitted across the wire? And that's all about the transport. And primarily, we are using FinMS for that as a transport tool. And then underlining that all is really what we've developed as a playbook, which we've kind of written in the style of LIMSI for Dummies to make it simple to try to bring all these things together, because it's quite a bit of documentation if anybody's tried to go through it. So collaboration opportunities. The first one, format and approach for documentation. We actually dug into the archives and found a picture of Austin Chrysler's great-great-grandfather. I think that's the bubonic plague case notification. What was that, 1.z? But it is interesting because I do wear hats on both the LIMSI project and the FLIP project, and we're bringing them closer together now, but what I've seen is that we're trying to really document the same type of things, but we've come up with some different flavors of how to do that. And I think one of the things we want to do with this community practice is come together on how we're going to document some of the things that have to be documented. Another area for collaboration that I see is really a consistent use of the HL7 segments. When this community first came together, we thought, well, can we all just harmonize on a single HL7 message and a single version? And we tried to go down that path, and it really didn't work because it's different use cases. But what we did find, though, is that even though the messages are different, they utilize the same segments, maybe in a different order, maybe there's segments in one message that aren't in another. But if we could harmonize on the way that we use those segments, then theoretically we can kind of put those round pegs in the round holes and they'll work between the messages. Consistent interpretation of standards. our little Judge Judy there. When I first came into this world of standards, I didn't think there would be a need for a Judge Judy, honestly, because I thought that it would be just clear that this is the standard, go implement it. But that's not necessarily the case. It really is analogous to the law in a certain sense, because the law is there and documented, but you do need to interpret the law. And I found that across the messaging projects that the standards can be interpreted differently, and so we want to try to bring together how we interpret those standards in this group a little nicer than Judge Judy does. Application of standard vocabulary, another one where thought it would be just straightforward. So we're going to figure out what is the LOINC code for the influenza virus A swine origin RNA panel. And the answer is 55466-7, ? It's not quite that bad. We don't shake a magic eight ball. Ricky doesn't. Ricky's really primarily one of our primary vocabularists, but vocabularians? Whatever. LOINC and SNOMED persons. But it is interesting in that if you give a test to, two, three different scientists and ask them to put a LOINC code on it, they might come back with three different LOINC codes. And so another thing that we want to do is really try to apply the standard vocabulary in a consistent fashion. And then finally, what we really want to do also is learn from one another and learn from best practices. I'm amazed at how many smart people are in these work groups and the cool things that they come up with, and it just would be a shame if we didn't take advantage of learning from one another. So, Ricky.
All right, so now I have the big shoes to fill after speaking after John, and of course he already talked about a lot of the stuff that applies to Flip too, since he wears both hats. But so I kind of stole a little bit from him. It's Flip in a nutshell. And one of the use cases that, the overarching goal of Flip is to get lab people away from having to deal with forms and telephones and multiple data entry and back to the bench. And that's similar to LIMSI. And so I pulled out this scope slide from Flip, and if you were in Kurt's presentation earlier, you've seen this, and actually it's missing one use case, but we'll work through it. So the purple circle really lists the first phase of what Flip is working on, and the first use case, which unfortunately is the arrow that's missing, is from reporting from state public health lab to CDC influenza results, and that is fairly similar to what ELR is doing, only that the in this case, the receiver is not the public health department at the state or local level. In this case, the receiver is CDC EPI. So that's our first use case, and we call that the electronic lab surveillance message. The second use case are the bidirectional dark blue arrows between the state to CCID, sending orders into CCID, sending a specimen to CCID, and getting reference testing done, and getting the results back. That is the second use case. The third use case is getting, basically doing the same reference testing between state laboratories, for example, during surge capacity, or for reference testing, because not every state lab does every single test. The fourth use case, which is not depicted on this diagram, is building the infrastructure to be able to do this. And one way we do that is we have implemented two route-not-read hubs, both in production, one in Florida and one in Nebraska, that are interoperable with each other. Seven states are currently connected to it, and we're in the process of moving the influenza result reporting to CDC over to be using those hubs as well. The fifth use case is what we're doing right here, collaboration with other groups. So reaching out to ELR, to LIMSI, to attending HL7 meetings and Lung Cancer NOMAD, reaching out to other organizations like JFIT, who were on the panel this morning, to get a broader view of what we need to do, and also give our input to standards for stuff we need to be in there. And then last but not least is the white circle there. That's our future. We want to be able for the public health lab to remain as important as it is today by also allowing it electronic data exchange with all the partners. So local public health labs, hospitals, and private doctor offices and labs, and commercial labs. So that's a big bite. Who's part of FLIP? All the color states are part of FLIP at this point. They are part of the various work groups that we have going on. These states are currently working on getting influenza result reporting to CDC, which is the red dot over there. The two blue dots are the R&R hubs. So you see the red lines are connecting those the hubs and also to CDC. And the blue lines you see was the use case three, where we have states working on order and result reporting between one another. One is Florida and Texas for influenza, and also for influenza is Nebraska, Minnesota, and Iowa. They're working on test order and test result reporting. And this is basically the use case slide that I talked about earlier. I just left it in, so when people want to look at this later, they can still see it. So lessons learned, and this is very similar to what John has to say, the devil is in the details, so keep it simple and harmonize. So if one of the things Flip spends a lot of time on is agreeing on using the same term for what we think is the same concept. So can we all agree to use not detected instead of negative? Well, maybe. And that you'd be surprised of how many hours you can spend discussing that with the different experts. Collaborate with the purpose. Again, you know, have a clear use case, a clear limited scope so that you can work with that. And for this COP, we actually had specific items we wanted to work on and put this to the group and said, okay, so how do you do it in ELR? How do you do it in LIMSI? How do you do it in FLIP? And can we all come up with a specific thing? The biggest thing I think that we need to do when we work in this environment is to know that there'll be changes. You know, you make a decision 1 year and 2-3 years down the road, you'll have to make a change somehow because things have changed or because you're growing or the standards change. So it always feels, and because of all these changes, it always feels like Groundhog Day. But, you know, we're actually taking steps forward, believe it or not. So all you got to do is stay focused. And I'm not as fancy in the PowerPoint as John, so I can't give you the work products and those beautiful steps that John did, but I tried to give you the path. So step one is preparation. We have a readiness assessment survey that states can take to see, you know, what their IT background is and how ready they would be to participate in FLIP. And we have a primer document that records all the ground rules for FLIP, that records the lessons learned and all the decisions that we've made so far. Step two is the vocabulary work. So we have a data collection sheet to actually get into the nitty-gritty detail of the lab tests and the lab results. Once we have that, we can assign the standard codes if they haven't been already assigned by the lab. We organize it into a category worksheet where we have the standard code assigned and all the labs that do the same tests fall under that same standard master test. And from there, we create a mapping workbook that helps you put your local codes to the standard codes that have been agreed on. Step three is going through implementation. We have, of course, an implementation guide. And when you take the implementation guide and the mapping workbook, you come up with encoding guidelines that basically helps you for each test to figure out how your OBX segment, so your result segment, is going to look like. And we have specific testing protocols when we're actually in the implementation phase before we turn over to production. And step four is production, and of course we're going to have changes, as I mentioned earlier, so we have a change request process, and all those are located in SharePoint, and that's where we keep all our documents. So collaboration opportunities, don't be late for the conference call, or we talk about you. Not really, we don't have time for that. But we do have a lot of conference calls, and that's because we involve the right participants at every level. We have steering committee calls, we have messaging-focused calls, we have vocabulary-focused calls, and we have specific use case-focused calls. And we reach out to others to get input on, are we doing this right? You know, here's what we think we're doing, give us feedback, tell us, are we doing this right? So with that, we're coming to the areas of synergy, which probably should be apparent after these three talks. So one of the things we can all work on and make better and easier for you is the format and approach for documentation. Again, the consistent use of segments from one message to another. So FLIP is using a different message than ELR is. It's the same message type as LIMSI, but a different version. But they all have the same message segments. So within those segments, we're going to work on being consistent. Again, consistent interpretation of standards where standards are not granular enough. So both LIMSI and FLIP run into that issue where LOINC, for example, will not go granular enough in terms of a method code that they can assign. So there we often spend time on the phone going, okay, so how do you do it? Do you have the same code or and application of standard vocabulary? We are already talked about it. So, and we often talk and ask, how do you do it? What's the best practice? What do you think? So with that, we're going to open it up to questions and comments. And I'll hand it over to you.
Are you guys collecting the best practices and keeping them in some central place where they can be accessed and shared?
I don't think we have that yet.
Used?
No, but we will.
We're keeping those in John's brain.
That's a really good point. I mean, I think that we, yeah, members of the community kind of know, but it would be great to have that, and you know, SharePoint would probably be a great place for that.
Yeah, I was going to put in a plug for a PH Connect. Anybody heard of that or seen that yet?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a collaboration platform that the Public Health Informatics Institute has created for collaboration of individuals, but also collaboration of communities. So the FIN communities of practice, such as the laboratory messaging community of practice, we are the first pilots on this collaboration platform. So in the platform, it's sort of like a LinkedIn. Anybody on LinkedIn or I hate to say Facebook because that's what my son does, you know. Well, I do it too, but not like he does. There's a story behind that. You know, when I got on, he said, "Mom, now that all of you old farts are on it, we're going somewhere else." But anyway, there are spaces for. I hope this is that's being recorded, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
I hope you got that.
there are professional spaces. So this phconnect.org. That's all you need to know. phconnect.org. www.phconnect.org. You can go on, create a professional profile, and you can join the laboratory messaging community of practice. It's already set up. There are other communities of practice. There are vocabulary, health information exchange, InfoLinks. You can join that as well. But this is a place where you as individuals can go and start talking to each other. So there's threaded discussion. There's a place to put documents so people can see those and start working on those together. Yesterday in the vocabulary and messaging community of practice, Sundak and Ted Klein used PH Connect as flashed it up on the screen and had their documents up there and used that for their talking points to discuss H1N1 vocabulary. So please feel free to get on that. We encourage you to get on that, and that's a place where these best practices can start being captured. And one more thing.
Sure.
You guys have been using Sitescape. The individual projects have been using Sitescape. And at some point, we may consider moving some of that over to the platform, if that works. That will be a kind of a decision that will be made by the working groups. But that's an option.
I think that one of the things still to be determined about the PH Connect is the public and private areas, because I know that your groups may be, ELR is fairly open, although we do have a few, we do actually on our own website, we do have some things that you have to log in to see, but a lot of it is also open. But Well, so I think we should open this up at this point to discussion, except we do have one announcement first from Sandy Thames. Would you like to?
I think Sandy got a question as well.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see your question.